The Second World War, a podcast by Stephen Bedard.
Today's episode is brought to you by DB. DB is a Scandinavian brand that makes backpacks and bags to help people on the move stay ready for anything. From the streets to the peaks, DB's gear is travel tested by some of the world's best athletes, adventurers, and creators. Over the past decade, DB has designed and developed, released, and refined the best bags in the market. With DB's patented hookup system, you are able to attach smaller products to your backpack, roller, or tote. We all know how important it is to have the right luggage or bag when we're traveling. We are teaming up with DB to exclusively offer our listeners 10% off your next purchase by using the code POD10 or going to the link in our show notes. DB, it's time to move on. Time to get going.
What we have seen so far in the Battle of France was called by the Germans Fall Gelb or Case Yellow. Now we move into Fall Rot or Case Red. Meanwhile, General Weygand was desperately trying to fend off the German invaders and save his country. The French had lost much of their equipment and men and were now in a position where they were facing a German force almost twice their size. Add to that a massive exodus of French refugees that has been estimated as being between 6 and 10 million people, and you have an almost impossible situation. On June 5th, the Germans began their second offensive across areas that previous generations of German and French soldiers had fought in the Great War. The Germans found themselves against stronger than expected French resistance. For one thing, the French discovered that their tanks were better than the German tanks, and they were able to reorganize some armored divisions. Morale was starting to rise. Many of the early French setbacks were because of superior German tactics. The French were slowly starting to adapt. The Germans fought their way toward Paris, and the French defended it the best they could. They could have held on to it for a while, but the city would have been devastated in the process. The French government made the decision on June 10th to make Paris an open city, meaning that if the Germans entered the city, there would be no armed resistance. Even with this, Churchill was determined that France would keep fighting. On June 13th, Churchill met with the French leadership. He knew that the French still had an army, and even more importantly, they still had a powerful navy that was intact. Some of the British and French, including Prime Minister Renault and Charles de Gaulle, were in favor of a Franco-British Union. They drafted a document that in part said, quote, "France and Great Britain shall no longer be two nations, but one Franco-British Union. The Constitution of the Union will provide for joint organs of defense, foreign, financial, and economic policies. Every citizen of France will enjoy immediately citizenship of Great Britain. Every British subject will become a citizen of France." End quote. Other French leaders, including Philippe Pétain, strongly opposed the Union and would prefer to surrender to the Germans than hand over their possessions to the British. The Union idea was defeated. It's interesting to imagine how things might have turned out if the Union had taken place. The original plan for French defense against Germany relied heavily on the Maginot Line. The Germans made the wise decision to bypass it, but eventually it would have to be taken care of. The Germans circled around and attacked the line from the rear. Meanwhile, the Germans launched Operation Tiger, an assault against the Rhine. Between these two attacks and the work of the Luftwaffe above, it was still a difficult battle. However, in the face of overwhelming force, the French fortresses fell one by one. Last episode, we looked at the evacuation of the BEF from Dunkirk. But Britain was not done helping France yet. A second BEF was organized, including the 1st Canadian Infantry Division, Yay Canada, to assist Weygand in his defense. From the beginning, there were signs that this was a futile effort. It may have happened just for the purpose of encouraging France to stay in the fight. It's no surprise that it did not go well. At first, London did not want to admit that another evacuation was needed, France felt betrayed by Britain once. How could they react to an encore? Still, Operation Ariel was put into action, and close to 200,000 Allied personnel were evacuated from the Atlantic coast of France. The Battle of France was primarily about the Allies against Germany. Mussolini wanted to be involved as well, but he had to wait and see which way the wind was blowing. Could the Germans pull off their daring plan? By June 10th, it was clear that the Germans were going to win, and so Italy declared war on Britain and France. Italy attacked France through the Alps. It did not go well for Mussolini, but he just needed something to make sure that he was seated at the table when the Axis victory was achieved. The situation for France was becoming hopeless. The only hope they really had been in the Franco-British Union that had been proposed and defeated. As a result, Paul Reynaud resigned as Prime Minister on June 16th. He was succeeded by Philippe Pétain. Pétain had been brought out of retirement to boost morale. He had been a great French hero from the Great War and was held in high esteem. The thought was that having him around would help France in their darkest time. How well Pétain succeeded depends on your perspective. Pétain went on the radio and announced his intention to seek an armistice with the Germans. What happens next was full of symbolism. Hitler chose the forests of Compiègne as the site for the armistice negotiations, the same location as the 1918 armistice when Germany had been defeated by France and her allies. Not only that, the negotiations took place in the same railway carriage that had been used in 1918. Hitler sat in the same chair that the French commander had sat in his time of victory. The imagery was intense as the tables literally were turned on France. France was divided into a German occupation zone and a free zone. The new French state is often referred to as Vichy France, as the government, under Philippe Pétain, established itself in Vichy, in the unoccupied free zone. Although Vichy France was officially independent, it did adopt a policy of collaboration with Germany. Was Pétain a hero or a traitor? It's likely that Pétain saw himself as saving France. He had seen the destruction of the Great War and he did not want his country destroyed again. However, the policies he adopted, including anti-Semitism and other pro-Nazi policies, call his integrity into question. Certainly not all French supported this turn of events. On June 18th, Charles de Gaulle made a speech refusing to recognize the Vichy government, and he began to organize the Free French Forces. Although France had officially surrendered, they were not out of the fight yet. One sticky point for the British was the status of the French Navy. Technically, the French Navy was still under the control of the Vichy French government. They had promised not to hand the ships over to the Germans, but how could the British be certain? Those ships could be used in the anticipated German invasion of Britain, and that was something that London could not risk. The attack on Mer el Kabir took place on July 3rd. This was a British naval operation against the French Navy ships in French Algeria. The hope was that the French would hand over the ships to the British, an act prohibited by the recent armistice. As the French refused, the British attacked. These two recent allies were now fighting each other. Over 1,000 French servicemen were killed by the British. This remains a controversial decision to this day. Was the killing of innocent French sailors justified? Would the French have handed over the ships to the Germans? Was there another way? We do know that this helped fuel the anti-British sentiment in Vichy France. With the armistice, Britain found itself alone with its dominions against the German war machine. Could they protect their island? The situation was grim. Their Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, for all his faults, was the right person for the right time for keeping the British people in the fight. Churchill gave a speech to the House of Commons on June 18, 1940. With these words, we will conclude this episode. What General Weygand has called the Battle of France is over. I expect the Battle of Britain is about to begin. Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization. Upon it depends our own British life and the long continuity of our institutions and our empire. The whole fury and might of the enemy must very soon be turned on us. Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be freed and the life of the world may move forward into broad sunlit uplands. But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour. Thank you for listening to this episode. Please visit me at stephenjbedard.com/secondworldwar. Also consider supporting me on Patreon by going to patreon.com/hopesreason. Even $1 a month, less than a cup of coffee, will help keep this podcast going. Please find me on Twitter and Facebook. Thank you, and God bless.